From Redeemer Broadcasting, this is Holding All Things Together for this first weekend in September. I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter. We have a severe problem in these United States, wherein we continue to hand out free stuff to people, even if they have no desire to work. During the last administration, we witnessed radical policies, support for transgenders, massive taxation, COVID mandates, and lockdowns. Not surprisingly, common sense folks are totally fed up. As a result, the party on the left is worried, as they see their polling numbers continuing to slide, and they understand that they need new voters. There are so many Americans who are alienated that the left hopes that the unvetted illegal aliens they let in and supported with welfare, housing, free medical services, etc., will become dependable voters. Today, we talk about the left building this free stuff army any way they can. We contrast this with scripture. Our guest is journalist Robert Knight.
There's just millions of people who are alienated by these radical policies and just want to do the right thing, get a job, support their families, go to church, things like that. And the thing about socialists is they're always burning things down and promising to build on the ashes. They're reinventing constantly, and that's part of their strategy. They want to wipe out any memory, any tradition, because that reminds people of better times.
Also ahead, Pastor Bill Shisko discusses the Fourth Commandment.
Later in the program, writer Jerry Wiss looks into some detail at our nation's history of slavery and what was the true historical motivator for the Southern states joining the War for Independence, which the 1619 narrative distorts.
Finally, we'll take another look at this week in history. All this just ahead on Holding All Things Together.
We're going through the Westminster Shorter Catechism as a form of sound doctrine, and remember, you can get a copy of that catechism by communicating with Redeemer Broadcasting. And we've come to the Ten Commandments section, which begins with question 57, and the Fourth Commandment begins with 57. And what is the Fourth Commandment of the Ten Commandments? Well, it's remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger that is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. And the reason for the lengthy delineation of beasts and so on is insofar as you can give rest to those under your authority, give it to them. So we're dealing with the Sabbath commandment, and there are those who don't think the Sabbath commandment applies in the New Covenant. Well, number one, the Sabbath is part of the moral law. In the Old Testament, there are ceremonial laws that prefigure the coming of Christ and his sacrificial work. There are civil laws that applied to Israel in the Old Testament, and by something called general equity, they could make application today. But the point is, the moral law is for our good. And even those in the broader evangelical community are recognizing you've got to have a day of rest or you'll kill yourself. And the Sabbath commandment isn't contradicted by Colossians 2:16, for example. Festivals, new moons, and Sabbaths is a reference, when those three are together, to ceremonial aspects of the Old Testament law. And remember, Jesus affirmed the Sabbath commandment. Matthew 12 and verse 8, he said, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." Now, he took away a lot of the crust that the Pharisees had put on the Fourth Commandment, and in so doing clarified what it meant. but he is Lord of the Sabbath. And Hebrews 4:9 is most interesting. There remains a Sabbath keeping for the people of God. What does that mean? Well, we'll look at that next week.
On the Zoom line with us today is Robert Knight, who writes for the Washington Times. Robert, it's great to have you back with us.
It's good to be on with you, Dan.
You wrote an article the other day that caught my eye, titled Building the Free Stuff Army Any Way They Can. That really resonated with me because I think we have a severe problem in these United States where maybe it's guilt, who knows what it is, but we keep handing out stuff to people that don't want to work, essentially. And there's a more nefarious reason why we're doing it, but maybe you can explain some more to our listeners today, Robert. Take it away.
Well, I think the nefarious reason, Dan, is the Democratic Party has lost the support of many Americans because they've adopted so many radical policies, from transgenders to excessive taxation to COVID-19 mandates and lockdowns, and the list goes on, and people are fed up. So the Democrats have decided, well, we need new voters because we've alienated so many Americans. So let's keep the borders open for 4 years, let in millions of people, get them hooked on welfare, housing, medical, free medical services.
Right.
And then we will turn them into voters as soon as we can. I really believe that's what's happening. Yeah.
I agree. I keep going back to the scriptures, Robert, where it says, "For even when we were with you, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat." 2 Thessalonians 3:10. And that comes from the Apostle Paul, and it's New Testament. You would say, oh, that's just Old Testament. No. It's an Old Testament principle carried into the New Testament, and it's still applicable. God expects people to work and not receive free handouts. Your comments?
It's biblical that work is a good thing, and it's necessary. It keeps us out of trouble, among other things.
Yeah, it really does.
And one of the reasons so many youths are so lost is because a lot of them don't work anymore. You know, the paper route is gone, the lemonade stands are gone, the entry-level jobs at low wages to allow employers to train people have been raised because of the unions to where young people find it hard to break in.
Yes.
And meanwhile, they're handed everything. And then they get into trouble. It's not good for anybody.
These handouts are a great temptation, though. You know, we have something going on here in New York State with this race for the mayor, and maybe you could talk to us about that. And I don't have good feelings about it, Robert.
Yeah, it's kind of stunning, actually, that Zohran Mamdani, who's a self-proclaimed socialist Muslim Democrat, got the Democratic nomination, and New York City voters will be voting in November, and he's way ahead of everybody else. And he has promised government-owned grocery stores, free public transit, free child care, and all sorts of other goodies, which would break the budget, and it will drive more businesses and taxpayers out of the city. But the most interesting thing about Mr. Mamdani is he used the communist phrase, seizing the means of production.
Right.
He live-streamed a conference of the Young Democratic Socialists of America. Now, that is right out of Karl Marx. That is communism. That's not merely socialism, which is bad enough. In fact, if you want to define the two, communism is socialism with a gun, because you need government force to mandate it, because it's so against human nature. Human nature is you want to provide for your family, and communism says, no, your family's no more important than any other human beings. And it's the state that's most important. And that's what these socialists are all about.
Right.
It's always more and more government. It's always higher taxes. It's always power trips.
And it seems, Robert, that those who are more elitist, you know, college educated, fall into this trap and they don't see it. And yet, if you have a blue collar worker, maybe he, you know, he's out digging ditches, he's running equipment, building houses, they typically don't go the socialist route from what I'm perceiving.
Something that Donald Trump tapped into back in 2016.
Yeah.
There is just millions of people who are alienated by these radical policies and just want to do the right thing, get a job, support their families, go to church, things like that. And the Democrats were saying, oh, that's all in the past. You have to have the thing about socialists is they're always burning things down and promising to build on the ashes. They're reinventing constantly, and that's part of their strategy. They want to wipe out any memory, any tradition, because that reminds people of better times.
We've gone through a massive influx of illegal aliens, and some people get upset at me for bringing this up, but I feel it's very dangerous to these United States. Your comments?
There are so many people who aren't familiar with the culture and may not want to assimilate, and we for 4 years under President Biden made no distinctions. Anybody who wanted to get in got in. And that's dangerous for a number of reasons. Flooding a lot of districts with people that had to go on public support, and you know, flooding the emergency rooms because they couldn't afford medical care.
True.
But by law, anybody walking into a emergency room has to be treated. So they turned our emergency rooms in major hospitals into free public health centers.
Right.
And this costs a fortune, and the cities are going broke. And it's, but this started before the massive illegal immigration. It started really with the Great Society and Lyndon Johnson,
correct,
who started all the welfare programs that basically bribed men to stay out of the house and the women to have babies as single mothers to get all the welfare goodies.
Yes.
And this destroyed the black family. It caused crime to soar in all the urban areas, and that's still the case. And it's going to take a lot of redoing to put back together the family, which is the most important social institution other than the church.
It really is.
And they
yeah.
go hand in hand. Churches aren't strong without strong
that's
families
right.
and vice versa. And the left knows this. Communists like Zoran Mamdani know this. So they're hostile to Christianity and Judaism and anything that stands in the way of their making the state their God.
Yeah. I also personally believe we need a revival where it's a spiritual, an awakening, you know, similar to the First Great Awakening where men, women are crying out to God for mercy. And the Lord saves them and sets them on a new path. And I tell you, that path is not communism, that's for sure. In the last 2 minutes remaining, can you talk to us about congressional seats and why the left likes to expand the numbers of illegals with respect to congressional seats?
Yeah, the system we have now is the U.S. Census counts people. And they don't make a distinction between citizens and, say, illegal aliens. And yet congressional districts are decided by sheer population. So the states that allow all these illegal aliens in get more congressional seats, which is totally unfair to the taxpaying U.S. citizens in other states. It's way out of whack, and the good thing is that President Trump has vowed to end this corrupt practice, so that U.S. citizens don't see their votes watered down.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty simple. I like the way you put it in those terms. You ought to write a book. Oh, wait a minute. You have. Tell us about your latest book, Robert Knight.
It's called The Battle for America's Soul, And it's what it is an updating of a book I wrote in 2018 called A Nation Worth Fighting For, but I brought it all the way up to date as of June. With new footnotes, new material, stuff about President Trump and what's really going on in America. So you can get it at my website, which is roberthknight.com. I believe it's also being offered by Coral Ridge Ministries.
Oh, neat.
Because they published it.
Yeah.
So you could go to their website, too. But if you want to get it directly from me, go to my website. And while you're there, just sign up for my newsletter, which is just my Washington Times column every Monday morning. I send it out for free.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I really like that mailing, and I appreciate it. It's interesting, too, how that you got connected a little bit with Coral Ridge. I'll bet you know our friend Jerry Newcomb.
Jerry and I go way back. In fact, I even worked for Coral Ridge for a few years.
Oh, that's neat.
And Jerry had me in the studio all the time. And I'd written several books for Coral Ridge. They're one of the presidents of Coral Ridge actually said, "You're part of the DNA of this place, Bob."
Aww.
So I'm very proud of that in a good way.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful compliment. Well, thank you very much for spending your time with our listeners today. Robert Knight, may the Lord watch over you and keep you and bless you and your family. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on, Dan, and God bless you and your family.
As school starts again, what will your children and grandchildren be learning about our American War for Independence? Many public schools have signed on to teach the 1619 Project curriculum, while other public schools who have made the wise decision of not including this unsubstantiated narrative. Most homeschools and many private schools see through the 1619 curriculum bias and have excluded it. Today, Jerry Wiss looks in some detail at our nation's history of slavery and what was the key historical motivator for the Southern states joining the War for Independence, which the 1619 Project narrative entirely ignores. Jerry is a frequent contributor to Holding All Things Together and is a writer for Christian Renewal magazine.
School bells will soon be ringing, and our children will be setting themselves again to learning their ABCs, science, how to calculate, and yes, American history. What will they be learning about the American War for Independence, its motivations, and the interlocking events that eventually unfolded into what became the United States of America? That may depend on where they're learning it. Thousands of public school districts have signed on for the 1619 Project, otherwise known as critical race theory. Others have not. 18 states have said no to the 1619 Project as part of their public school curriculum. What is your state or school district doing? There are various parts of the 1619 Project, but its key theory is that Southern states during the War for Independence would likely have sat out the war or even sided with the British, except for the fact that many of the slaves in the South ran away to the British side, promising to fight in exchange for their freedom. The 1619 Project infers, without proof, that the South only joined the North against the British to get back their slaves. The projection of venality onto Southern farmers, however, is just that, a projection, as demonstrated recently by Pepperdine University research historian Edward Larson, who shows in his book American Inheritance, Liberty and Slavery in the Birth of a Nation, that runaway slaves to the British side did not motivate Southern plantation owners to war. In fact, they had made up their minds a year before the Brits issued their Proclamation of Freedom to slaves willing to fight for Britain. The key event to win over Southerners to the War for Independence was the British closing of Boston's port to commercial traffic in 1774. It wasn't long after that that representatives from both North and South gathered in Philadelphia for the First Continental Congress, where they formed an army, navy, and coined a new currency, agreeing to boycott British imports. The British Proclamation of Freedom for Fighting Slaves was not issued until more than a year later. The notion of Southern plantation owners siding with the North against the British because of runaway slaves to the British side was introduced not by an historian, but a journalist, Nicole Hannah Jones, in a New York Times Magazine article in 2019, for which she won a Pulitzer Prize. Several actual historians challenged her interpretation, and by 2020, 21 historical scholars had signed and sent a letter to the Pulitzer Center asking for Hannah Jones's Pulitzer to be rescinded based on faulty information and analysis. This is not the first time the New York Times had been caught publishing unsubstantiated claims and made-up stories. The Times responded with a diminutive version of the same falsehood, namely that defending slavery was one of various motivations that drove the Patriots to independence. But a diminutive falsehood is still a falsehood. In fact, before the British Proclamation for slaves to join its forces, Patrick Henry delivered his famous "Give me liberty or give me death" speech, in which immediately before uttering those famous words, he referenced the Boston port closure by the British. Moreover, the British promise of freedom for the enslaved in the 18th century proved destructive as well as a lie. Poorly trained and ill-equipped slaves stood no chance against local militia. When the war was over, those who fled to the British were re-enslaved, promises notwithstanding, and shipped to Florida or the Caribbean to work under more brutal circumstances than they had before. No one wants to celebrate slavery. But to invent venal motivations for farmers to join the war for independence when evidence shows otherwise is as bad, if not worse, than denying slavery's part in our history. What will your children be learning in history class?
Time once again for This Week in History. September 4th, 476. While the Byzantine Roman Empire, founded in 330, would last until 1453, the western portion of the Roman Empire falls this day to a German barbarian who deposes Romulus Augustus, last emperor of the Western Empire. Odoacer proclaims himself King of Italy. September 5th, 1774. Carpenter's Hall is the scene of the first session of the Continental Congress, convened in response to Parliament's enactment of the Coercive Acts. 56 delegates from all colonies but Georgia attend the meeting in Philadelphia to write a declaration of rights and grievances. They elect Peyton Randolph of Virginia as the first president of Congress. September 6th. One of five ships that began the circumnavigation of the world on September 20, 1519, the Vittoria, arrives in Spain this day in 1522, completing the quest. Ferdinand Magellan, commander of the ships, died in April from a poisoned arrow, preventing him from seeing the conclusion of his quest. And, also September 6, 1620, with her sister ship unable to set sail, the Mayflower nonetheless leaves Plymouth, England, bound for the New World. Hardly an ocean liner by today's standards, the Mayflower is 90 feet long and 60 feet wide. It takes 2 months and 5 days to make the crossing. Before disembarking, pilgrims sign the Mayflower Compact. The compact is both a social contract and a church covenant. It later influences important thinkers like John Locke.
That was This Week in History, Events as Man Recorded Them, as God Ordained Them.
That's our program for this week. Thanks for joining us. Holding All Things Together is a production of Redeemer Broadcasting, and the views expressed are those of the participants. If you'd like to help us continue to produce this program and distribute it to others, please consider supporting us. Our mailing address for your tax-deductible gift is Redeemer Broadcasting, P.O. Box 1520, Olive Bridge, New York, 12461. You may also email us at ministry@redeemerbroadcasting.org. For Holding All Things Together, I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter.
God willing, see you next week.